Howdy, folks. Welcome back to the Illinois Labor Hour. And today we have with us Gene Vanderport, longtime activist, now serving as UNISERVE director for the Illinois Education Association in this area. Gene, maybe you could tell us a little bit more about what the UNISERVE director is.
Yeah, be happy to.
Okay.
For the last 15 years, I've been operating in the IEA. I came out of the AFL-CIO from the Danville area in Washington, D.C., and been proud to serve IEA in Champaign-Ford counties. And UNISERVE directors represent, at bare minimum, around 1,250 educational employees. Here in Champaign-Ford County, there's something like 20 locals I represent, help them with collective bargaining, organizing, political action. Yeah, it's K-12 and higher ed as well.
So your job translates into more traditional union milieus as perhaps like business manager, business agent.
That and everything else, too. Lobbyists, political actions are much a part of the activity as collective bargaining.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's the whole nine yards.
So maybe you're doing perhaps what we have several people doing at the laborers.
Well, we make that claim as a staff union quite often, quite frankly.
Okay. Well, anyway, reason you're here today is that you've recently got some people a living wage.
Yes, sir. That's right. Maybe the first K-12 public education contract in the state of Illinois that explicitly guarantees a living wage as the floor for the salary schedules and compensation of its workforce. So we're very proud of that. And it was a hard-won fight. We bargained for 9 months in Unit 4, as Unit 4 Champaign Schools, the largest K-12 district in the area. I might also add, and we've said this more than once to the other side, that the richest district south of I-80 in many respects. As you know, property tax base in Champaign is immense compared to other towns in the area. A town that's growing, a town with manufacturing, a town with a lot of retail, a lot of service. It's not Decatur. It's not Danville, where Rust Belt problems have caused intern problems for the funding of schools.
All right. Yeah. This is definitely a cutting-edge community with all the computer work and engineering and everything else.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I can tell just from driving around, especially on the edges of town, that there's a pretty good property tax base here.
That's right. And given the regressive way we fund taxes in Illinois, this is one community where we thought the goods were there and it could be delivered. 3 years ago, the district reorganized itself and brought in a team of folks from Longview, Texas. And, of course, what we know about Texas, that's a right-to-work state. They don't have the experience with labor unions that folks here in Illinois do. Not bad people, good people, frankly. Interesting assortment of folks, many of them very skilled, some maybe not as much, but nonetheless, they got very, very good salaries, replacing longtime veterans in the area, up to and including our good friend Art Culbert, a superintendent who's in the $250,000 range, where most superintendents in this area is 160 to 170 or less. So, what the argument of the board was, you got to pay for quality. Well, you betcha, and that was one of our demands as support staff union. IEA represents support staff only in Champaign. Our sister union, IFT, represents 700-plus teachers. The IEA and the Champaign Educational Support Professionals represents 480 support staff folks.
Okay. Could you perhaps describe what some of the jobs are that support staff
runs
does?
From everything from office managers to computer technicians, from teaching assistants to hall monitors, bus drivers to bus monitors, maintenance workers, custodians, food service, the whole nine yards of educational support.
Pretty much everything, everyone you need to keep a school operating.
Right, the first people you see when the kids go to school and the last people they see.
That's right, and it's not just, you hear support staff, you might just think the kitchen people, building service workers and so forth, but you're talking computer technicians.
Right.
And people in some types of sort of managing positions.
Yeah, the administrative wing of the district as well. Yeah.
So you're talking about some people that also have some education and skills.
Oh, yes.
And
so I have one teaching assistant with two master's degrees. I had one bus driver who just finished getting certified as a teacher, but it's back driving. So it's quite an interesting mix.
Oh, okay. So anyway, Dave, I know that you have a child going to these schools.
Absolutely. In fact, my daughter goes to Southside School, which is right next door to the Mellon Building, and I can attest to when I drop her off or pick her up from school, seeing all these signs, reserve parking spots for the superintendent, the assistant to the assistant superintendent to the assistant, and all those parking spots are occupied by very expensive automobiles. And frankly, as a parent, knowing what was going on for the last 9 months with these negotiations, the support staff, then getting a letter in the mail saying that the school district can no longer afford to supply the weekly reader to the children, that the parents are going to have to pick that up for $5 a child per semester, plus canceling the annual traditional school, fourth grade school field trip to the state capitol in Springfield. I was, not very happy, to say the least, as a parent.
Yeah, and also you are a property owner in Champaign,
yes.
And that's a property taxpayer.
Indeed.
And I guess that you are not begrudging these folks a living wage.
Well, of course not. No, especially seeing these high dollar salaries of these people that they brought in to administer the schools. It's obscene, to say the least, trying to deny someone a living wage when you have people making that kind of money.
Okay, now, Gene, just how is the living wage arrived at? Especially here locally.
Well, basically, it's derived from a Bureau of Labor Statistics number that calculates the amount of money it takes on average to support a family of four to keep them above the poverty line. And then that same number, the national number, is adjusted for your locale. That number would obviously be higher in Santa Monica, Baltimore, or Chicago, because cost of living is higher. So it's adjusted down here in this area to a more appropriate number. And currently that number, and this comes from the Living Wage Association, a rather respected coalition of 30-plus unions, churches, and other groups.
Oh, is that like a national?
It's part of a national movement, and we have a Champaign County affiliate. And been working for some time. Urbana City Council support a living wage. The county board supports a living wage. Public health, public housing support a living wage. And, quite frankly, the next target of the Living Wage Association was to take that same moral and economic argument about why living wage is where you need to start to Unit 4 schools, and that was part of our strategy in this last year. So the current number is $9.06. You adjust that to inflation, obviously, and healthcare benefits that have to be a part of that.
Okay, now, what was the lowest wage previous to this?
Well, in the last bargaining cycle, we just brought bus monitors back into the union. They were making minimum wage of $6.15. So we identified approximately 80 jobs in Unit 4 that were poverty jobs. Bus monitors, food service workers, and particularly transportation and food service was where they were concentrated. A high proportion of single parent homes, a high number of grandmothers who are raising kids, a lot of people of color. The usual gender and racial demographics, which just begged the question in Champaign. This is the Texans who were brought in to make sure that the equity demands were met for the kids. An argument is you can't talk about bringing the kids into an equitable school situation, an equitable educational environment, and not talk about the parents. Leave them in poverty. We all know what the problem is in terms of achievement and the like in public education. It's poverty. And that's what's slowing us down, and that's what we have to address. Well, you can't condemn a major portion of your workforce to poverty and still talk rationally about what you're going to do for the kids.
Yeah, that's sort of the old Henry Ford argument. Your members have to be able to raise their kids well in order for us all to advance.
And only here could we possibly quote Henry Ford in the positive. So,
but we will send people to your house to see if you're living the Henry Ford approved lifestyle.
That's right. So I think it's important to understand the background of this latest labor struggle. It goes back a year. And a year ago, when we were first looking at the books in Unit 4, they were flush with money. We were on, at that point, maybe our seventh business manager in 3 years. We now have had nine business managers in 3 years' time. Amazing turnover. But now we understand why there's been such turnover in the business office. Apparently, they're having some trouble counting. What occurred was we developed, first of all, a pretty sustained campaign against contracting out. Because when you look at support services, those are folks who are prime targets of contracting out. So we'd built a campaign over 4 or 5 years of educating school board members, recruiting school board members, holding them to their political commitments as school board members to oppose contracting out. Obtained contracting out prohibitions in the last couple contracts, but still kept the work of educating the board and the community. Would bring food service workers to a board meeting. Here are the people who serve your kids. We've been here for 20 years. We represent the families in Champaign. Our kids go here. Do the same thing the next month with bus drivers. Did the same thing the next month after that with custodians. And so personalized the issue. Now, these are real human beings providing real services to your children, and you don't want to go the way of contracting out those services. So basically to try to defuse that issue early on before you go to the table.
That's right. And these people, they are... I can't see any reason for contracting out because I think that these people, they are busy all day.
Yeah.
It's not like, Aramark can run some people over from one school to another or anything else. I don't understand how they can try and argue that they can do things cheaper.
Well, you can do things cheaper, but quality goes too. And the people expected the food to be of a good quality, expect to be transported by folks who know how to get through the streets of Champaign, which, frankly, is a daunting task any time of the day.
So yeah, I've delivered a few pizzas here before.
Well, just put those pizzas behind you with 60 screaming children on a rampage, and weather's bad, and you are on a timeline to deliver those kids. I don't know to this day how they do it. So they're amazing folks.
Well, with the bus monitors. When I was a kid, we didn't have bus monitors in BMET, and it was up to the driver. Of course, he wasn't dealing with traffic out in the country in BMET the way people are here, but it was up to him to try and maintain an environment that he could actually operate the bus safely in.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And I could see right there where these monitors in Champaign could be very, important.
That's right. And so the other thing that was happening was that we did bring the Living Wage Coalition into a board meeting at the end of our contracting out phase of educational work, and made a presentation, brought out 200-plus support staff workers to show support for a living wage. During that whole same period, we were preparing for our next bargaining cycle. So this time last year, we'd already begun the process of surveying CESP membership, meeting with the different classifications in the building, and developing a package of demands based on what the people want. And that's the one thing about IEA that I'm proud of, is that we don't come in like some external agent and say, this is what you are going to do. What we do is we go and we ask the people what they want, try to shape it the best we can, try to bring ideas about how to deal with poverty wages or bad working conditions, but the demands are theirs. And the bargaining team, which I must say, led by President Tom Grimsey, who's a fantastic local leader, he's custodian, he did a tremendous job pulling this union together. Larry Ingram from the Bus Garage, Mary Logsdon, Glory Avant, Kathy Weigart, a tremendous team we had. Put in a lot of hours with no pay to make this happen. They did a tremendous job. But they represented the interests of the people based on what the people said they wanted, based on people's own priorities. We didn't waver from that. So the living wage was part of that from the get-go. Contracting out protections was part of our package from the get-go. And a third thing that was significant was teachers and administrators had their pensions paid by the district. Okay, so there's a 10% amount of money that teachers normally would pay for their pensions out of their own pocket. But in Unit 4 and a lot of other K-12 districts, the district, as part of a contract, picks that amount up and pays it on behalf of the employees. We thought it was time for us, as support staff, not to have the 4.5% deducted from our already low wages. What we wanted was parity with the teachers and administrators on having their pensions paid. And the last element, obviously, is the one that's always most challenging to us, is since we have the insanity of employer-based health care as opposed to anything.
Yes.
No, think about it. Okay, what if you had employer-based fire service or employer-based public education? I mean, just to run it on out there, and you understand how insane it is to have employer-based health care.
Well, and that was all mainly due to a bizarre historical circumstance because of wage and price controls during World War II.
Fringe
benefits became the only way to compete for workers.
That's exactly right.
And now they don't need fringe benefits to compete for workers.
No, and what we need, obviously, is to take that issue off the table and go to a single payer system. Well, nonetheless, in the meantime, we have to deliver some kind of health care package to our folks. And one thing good about the unions, and I will say management and governance of Unit 4, is that we bargain together collectively with the health care monopolies, personal care and Health Alliance. We bargained collectively with them and have done a decent job in holding down the rates, but it's part of the overall package. So all those elements taken together is what we went into the bargaining process with this time last year and try to get the numbers right. And lo and behold, after our first bargaining session, which is, you know, how we're going to not arm ourselves at the table and how we're going to be nice to each other, you know, the ground rules section, the next meeting was up in July, and lo and behold, what happened on the way to the bargaining table, they all of a sudden discovered a deficit. it's amazing how this happens. We knew it was not a structural deficit like, you know, faces Decatur or Danville or Ludlow.
In other words, it's not a real deficit.
It's a deficit that is manufactured by numbers that you have placed on a page based on certain things you want that particular year.
It's a creative accounting.
Yes, that's right. And understanding that they had had 9 business managers tells you that they were having some trouble putting the numbers together. And they have found, apparently, and I will trust what they say. Well, you have to, the best of your ability. And that what had happened was they had expanded out the teaching ranks to deal with the high class sizes, particularly as it affected minority.
Oh, so they hired more teachers?
They hired more teachers, and they hired more teaching support services, hall monitors and the like, to keep the lid on inside the schools, which is an increasingly difficult task. Just read the paper 2 weeks ago when, during the process of this bargaining, there was also a riot in a middle school where middle school kids actually attacked some of our staff, and it was a melee. But in police, so this is the daily life of public education today. It's not what it was when we were kids. So we were more than a little disturbed by the fact that this administration, the highest paid in the area, school board that had no problem spending money on everything else, maybe was trying to do the right things, but all of a sudden was saying to us, in their first demand to us, that we had to take not only a salary freeze, but a cut. Now, that set the tone for the bargaining back in the summer of 2004. We mobilized our people again, and our folks went to the school board and said, we didn't make the mess, we're not cleaning it up. And you could just see the ranks starting to just come together, like there was an anger level. A real sense of the injustice of what was happening here, that the poorest of the people should not be the one to suffer because of mistakes you made. You know? I mean, deficit spending is what 80% of school districts do, and we know we don't need to be into this long term, so don't put this whole thing on our backs. So, meeting after meeting after meeting. In the meantime, we're doing more coalition building, reaching out to the labor coalitions at the U of I and in the community of Central Labor Council and talking to the media, going back to Living Wage Association, just telling people how desperate this is starting to become. By September, still no movement. We'd meet time and time again, but nothing was moving. Part of the problem, too, was the governance of the school board in Champaign, half of whom have been very supportive. And we give great praise to Scott Anderson, the school board president, who, while we may have yelled at each other a whole bunch, is an incredibly decent human being that tried his darndest to make things happen. And we don't say those things lightly in this movement. But then there's three people on the school board that causes great grief. Well, there's seven people on the school board. And that meant that the seventh person would have been the swing vote. However, he's been desperately ill. And so it's been a 3-3 situation all through the fall up till now. Brought in a federal mediator at one point, and actually, back in November, had breakthroughs. I mean, things were starting to move. We figured out that there was a way to bargain this contract that backloads our issues and gets there within a 3-year contract. Now it's 2.5. Within a 3-year contract, it gets us to where we want to be in terms of our goals: living wage, the pension, a decent raise, you know, health care, all those things. Protects our jobs. Contracting out provisions are still there. The bans are still there. All that happens. We get upgrades where we need them. Supports for professional development. We need all those elements could still be there. Maybe not at the front of the contract, but by the time you get to the last semester. Figured out how to do that. We're working towards that. And lo and behold, on the 1st of December, they pulled it off the table. The board pulled it off the table, took us back to where we were in July, and that was the ball game. Filed unfair labor practice charges at that point. Mediator was frustrated. We were angry. We met December 11th with the rank and file and got the best vote we ever had for an intent to strike in the history of organized educational labor in this area.
Do you have a percentage on that?
Yeah, it was 99%. There was like four people who voted no on the intent. That same margin held up when we came back in January. So we sent them the message in December that we were serious. Obviously, you don't strike on Christmas during the break. Nobody's there. we're pretty good on that strategic issue. So our hope was is that given the margins of the strike intent, you know, under Illinois law, you've got to have a 10-day cooling off period. That kind of margin would send them the message that we were serious. They don't see anything like it. At the same time, we kept recruiting more members. I mean, a lot of, you know, fair share members and non-members who were grandfathered out were joining.
Okay, you might want to maybe explain that little bit of...
One of the provisions of the Collective Bargaining Act in Illinois is that you can have a membership recognized for collective bargaining purposes, but I didn't tell you that everybody has to be a member.
Yeah, this is like a no-close shop.
But you can have what you call agency shop, which is fair share. In other words, if Dave is not wanting to join my union, he can pay a fee for our services. That's the fair share. And normally when you bargain that, you bargain at a date certain. So when we bargained this like 6 years ago, we had to grandfather out those people who are currently employed. So that tends to be the trade when you do get the fair share arrangements. Over time, the people come on board. I mean, that's what we know. They just do. And so where we had, believe it or not, in 1989, 77 members out of 400-plus people. Today, our membership is closer to 350. We got about 80 fair share people, and the rest are the non-members. So it's grown significantly.
Yeah, and this type of arrangement, it's for all public employees in Illinois.
Yeah, that's pretty standard for K-12. It's standard for higher ed. It's standard for the public sector writ large.
Okay.
So when we came back in January, that's when things heated up. It was our hope that the board would, you know, break with its past, get off the one-year contract, go to a multi-year contract that allowed us to fix the problems. We did meet with the board. We were told that they had a proposal. Unfortunately, the bargaining team for the board lost support for that proposal on the way to the table. They came to us with virtually nothing. And so we met then the following Saturday and took the strike vote. and said, well, this is pretty much it, folks. By that time, I need to tell you that once the strike vote had been taken, we'd already had in place a crisis team. And that, in my estimation, was the most amazing thing about this whole labor struggle, and that was the degree to which people organized themselves to take care of themselves in this collective effort. We had a food bank. A soup kitchen was being formed. A child care division had been set up. A transportation group. A counseling phone. I mean, we really had come together. I mean, it was very well organized. And these were things that the workers just did. Very impressed with that. Our crisis team was 30 to 40 people meeting almost on a daily basis.
All rank and file.
Yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. This is the bargaining team, executive committee, association reps, and other volunteers met continuously, keeping the information flow going, helping with the support services of the union. And what's about the most prepared group of folks I've had the luxury of working with and several decades of union work. So that was sending messages too. And I might add, we had the support of the teachers who voted not to take up any of our jobs, in fact, to support us in our effort. They can't strike with us since they're in a different union, but they stayed right with us through the whole
thing. But they don't have to scab on you.
They don't have to scab on us, and they did not. We were told that they had, you know, 53 buses and 53 drivers to replace ours. We said, that's interesting. You got 8 people on a sub-list. They told us they had the people replace our custodians. We said, well, that's interesting since we can't cover one guy's sick leave for a day.
Yeah.
So we didn't know where the 53 buses were hidden, but we were looking for them.
Maybe they were hidden with the with Sodom's weapons.
Yes, and we're still looking for those. And
Death.
That's right. By the time we got to the actual strike vote, the margins were even greater. They put out a message to our people, said you could drop out of union, and that weekend we signed up 30 more people.
That's incredible.
So we've asked a law firm working for this school board that they do this more often.
Yeah.
And we could actually build our locals up even more. But so then we got into the fateful week, the first week of February. We were meeting on the school board met on Monday after the strike vote. Came up with another proposal, 11:45 in the morning on Tuesday, the Tuesday before the Wednesday strike. We had an agreement. At 12:15, we got a call, and we were told that the agreement was off. They had recalculated their numbers. This business manager had recalculated the numbers and emailed the school board, much to the chagrin of bargainers at the table, and found that the $50,000 difference had now just ballooned to $350,000. The bargaining that afternoon was some of the most difficult I've ever witnessed, or any of our people on the team have witnessed. I mean, this was just a challenge to all of us to figure out what now. Met 5 o'clock with our crisis team, handed out the strike signs. Everybody set up their picket duty rosters. The phone call was to be made at 8 o'clock. That night to let the missiles fly for a 6:30 to 7 o'clock picket lines. Might say, too, that we had support of a parents group and some PTO folks also hammering the school board at this point.
The parents and teachers organization.
Them and an independent support group that Brother Johnson helped us with here, by the way. And those kinds of contacts did not hurt us. And by the way, the media was pretty decent. I mean, we kept strong ties with the media, kept them very informed about what was going on, and helped, frankly, shape, you know, the public's understanding of what was going on.
Well, Gene, I believe they're probably well acquainted with you with all the territory. I mean, your territory pretty well covers what the TV stations cover in this area.
Yeah, and it helps to have strong communication skills in your locals. And every local, every serious local we have folks that are pretty good at talking to reporters, you know, media presences happening.
Yeah, and I tell you, that is something that's really lacking in a lot of labor situations.
That's right. And you just got to understand the media, you know, you can call a press, you can call a picket line or a strike, or you can call a press conference. You can reach sometimes more people with a press conference. So anyway. Point of matter is at 7:45 on Tuesday night, the school board relented and came up with the money they needed to come up with.
And 8 p.m. was the deadline?
And 8 p.m. was the deadline.
Boy, talk about the 11th hour.
It was the 11th hour. And so we then had ratification vote the following Saturday, 2 weeks ago now. And there was the overwhelming vote to support the contract. And so the best line I heard in the whole strike came from Brother Jim Walker, a veteran bus driver. He said, "Gene, you know, I've been thinking about all that's on the table, you know, and they were coming after overtime for some drivers. He said, you know what, the overtime is my dessert, and I like my dessert. I'm accustomed to my dessert. But you know what, I got brothers and sisters out here who can't even come to the table. And so I'm going to make sure that we come out of this with everybody able to come to the table." That's the spirit that pulled these people together. It was amazing. It was amazing.
I think this is a good national story. I mean, this is... you know, it definitely goes against the trend we're seeing in organized labor nationwide. You hear about one concession after another, disillusioned rank and file with their leadership, contracts forced down the throats of the rank and file by the leadership, one defeat after another. And this is just such an incredible story.
Yeah, and I guess I can see it's getting about time where he says you need to take off. You can sum this up perhaps in identify a few of the what you think are the strongest factors that went together to get this across.
Well, the strongest factor clearly was the solidarity and the commitment of the rank and file. They were just absolutely there every step of the way. They participated in their own democracy. It was real democracy. Brother Johnson got to see it. It's rough Indeed. And tumble. It's wild and woolly.
Yes, me and Dave, being laborers and a carpenter,
understand it, but
we wouldn't understand it. we haven't experienced it. No, it's
real.
Not that bad.
The practice of equality is a wonderful thing to witness. That was the key, and it's the proof is in the contract. You know, I don't care. The highest paid worker is proud of the fact that the lowest paid people are now going to get the greatest raises. Some of them are going to realize close to 17.5% to 18% increases in a 3-year contract.
That's right. Raise the floor, don't lower the ceiling.
Absolutely, brother. So that's the story.
Well,
thank you.
Okay, thank you, Gene.
All right.
Yeah, thanks for stopping by, and good luck on your future negotiations.
Well, they've already started. Six more locals are coming up from Mahomet to Paxton to Thomasboro. We have two more organizing campaigns. The big one's going to be the University of Illinois, where we're trying to organize there. And we got an election coming down there and have an election in Rantoul for support staff. So, yep.
All right. Well,
thank you.
You have a good afternoon, and we'll move on here.